Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.
Now, full time on Radio City Talk.
It is Radio City Talk. It is 3 minutes after five. It is Monday evening. It is time to squeeze a football show into a radio show, or a football match into a radio show. I always make that mistake. Let's go and squeeze 90 minutes of action into what will be and is deemed to be something a bit special. I'm joined in the studio for All in the Game by Neil Atkinson from the multi award winning Anfield Rap, David Downey from the Blue Room, and Neil Sang, football agent and general footballing expert. First of all, evening, gents. And
hello, Connor.
Good evening.
Neil Atkinson walks into the room and says, sorry, I'm just running a wee bit late. Why is that? I left my wallet at work.
From I think so. I'm not sure yet, Connor, to be honest with you. It's a hope-so situation.
It would be very difficult to misplace a wallet that big.
Like to think so, wouldn't you?
He employs a man just to carry the wallet around.
He's just being modest, saying it's a wallet. It's actually a briefcase.
It's actually more of a purse. Yeah. It's like an actual purse with a dog and a bath on. So if this has gone badly wrong and it's not in the office and you find a purse across Liverpool with a dog and a bath on and a season ticket not in my name, you might want to you can get in touch. 01517081059.
There you go. Get in touch right now if you find Neil's wallet. It will have a lot of interesting, I get the feeling, cards and, you know, membership cards and stuff that maybe his nearest and dearest don't know about as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Welcome to the show, gents. Good to be back after the festive period. First of all, just give me a summation, if you can, about how important or how crazy the festive footballing period was for you respectively.
It was absolutely insane. It was so intense. It's worth, you know, the thing you end up taking from it, and it honestly felt like a journey to hell and back. I think I was about the angriest I've been after a draw in 7 years, maybe 8 years, when Liverpool finished 2-2 with Sunderland. I was apoplectic with rage at practically everybody, but especially Anthony Taylor, that Liverpool, over the festive period, effectively were played for and took 10 points. Chelsea were played for, took 9. Man United and Spurs were played for and took 12. And City were 9 and Arsenal was 7, but it felt like the hardest work ever to just stay where we were, or even just make 1 point back up on Chelsea in terms of sort of the emotional roller coaster of it between a Merseyside derby, going behind early against Stoke, obviously the huge game against City, and then what finally happened against Sunderland. None of it was quite as straightforward and as relaxing as you like, and it really felt like, you know, it felt like real running stuff, which is crazy because you start the Christmas period played 16, so all in it was stupidly intense, and I really wouldn't have a problem if everybody drop points next weekend. You know, if just that it became sane, because the fact that at the minute you feel as though the rate you've got to go at is 2.5 points a game. You know, when you actually extrapolate that out, that, you know, that is played for and got 10 points, and that feels like par. And if 10 points from a possible 12 is par, then we're all going to go mad by March. Not just Liverpool supporters, but everyone up and down the country. So I think the sooner the top six each learn to drop a couple of points here and there, and then we get into an... And by all means, let's have an intense April and May, but let's not be, you know, let's not be aging profoundly in around Christmas. I'm barely over the whole thing. And even now, I slept for 11 hours on Friday night and 10 hours on Saturday night, and I think it's genuinely related to everything that went on around Man City and Sunderland.
It does have that feel about it. I think that things are peaking too early in many ways. You look at how close the chasing pack are getting to, first of all, to Chelsea and with each other. It does feel like this is what we want in a couple of months' time. Let's slow things down a little bit, the rate in which everybody's going. And obviously it won't last because these sides have got to play each other in the next few weeks. There's some really big fixtures coming up over January, February. So,
but there's a chance that everyone just takes points off everyone else.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise you that we go to United and get a point, which would be fine. We beat Chelsea at home, but then Spurs come to Anfield and mug us and do us 2-1 or something. And then suddenly from those three games, you've got 4 points. And that's not a terrible return. But what I mean by that is the weekend that Spurs beat us, Chelsea and United both win, and they either make up ground or pull back clear. You know, the whole thing, I can just see it being everyone chipping away at everyone else when they're playing each other and then winning all the other games. And it's the winning all the other games, I think, which is the really arduous part from the point of view not just of a Liverpool supporter, but I think everyone up and down the country. It means there's no quiet weekends.
Look where Chelsea have dropped points so far this season.
Yeah.
Arsenal, Spurs, Liverpool, they're the three sides they've lost to. They've beaten everybody else. Well, relatively, might have had a point here or there.
No, the only other 2 points they've dropped is Swansea.
There you go. And that was Swansea away.
Swansea away.
Talk to me about it from an Everton perspective. Are you that passionate? I just kind of I dangled the carrot out there for Neil Atkinson as he normally does, and he was able to give me quite an insightful look as to exactly how his brain has been operating for the last 20 days or so. What about you from an Everton perspective? Because it was quite a positive Christmas for Everton.
It was in general, yeah. 7 points from four. If you go back a little bit further, which I'd like to, because we beat Arsenal before with the defeat against Liverpool. That's 10 points from a possible 15, 10 points from 5 games is fine. It's generally 4th place material in terms of averages. So, yeah, I was content with that. Still not playing well, or well enough. I think the Southampton game, which we won 3-0, slightly flattered us. But the thing that did impress me was the fitness of the players towards the end. I think that's a lesson that's been heeded since the collapse against Liverpool late on in that derby. There were lessons to be learned from that, and I'm pleased that was one of them.
I think Southampton was shattered as well. I mean, they had the worst. I mean, and that's not to talk down the win. It's a good win. It's a good win at home against Southampton. It's more they had the worst.
But I think before that derby, Neil, there's every chance we wouldn't have that extra bit of fitness.
Got the extra end, yeah.
We'd be as knackered as Southampton, is what I'm trying to say. So I was happy with that. FA Cup exit is a massive blunder. I would go as far as saying your season's over in terms of achieving anything tangible this season. I think. Neil's talking there about sides dropping points against each other. The best Everton can hope for is to try and capitalise on that, try and edge the way a little bit closer to, well, currently Man United who are in 6th, but it is ultimately about consolidating 7th place from now until May. Hopefully that's enough to get us into a European competition, because obviously the permutations of it, we need Liverpool and United to contest the League Cup final, and we also need two of the top 6 to get in the FA Cup final and win it. So it's a shame to be sitting here start of January saying to you that our season ultimately, the fortunes of it rely on other teams helping us out a little bit in terms of trying to improve and kick us on to the next level. But this is, I mean, the thing I'm keen to remind people of when I'm trying to take a little bit of perspective from this season is this is a side that's finished 11th in consecutive seasons. It's a brand new manager, it's a brand new setup, it's a brand new infrastructure in many ways. We had the excitement, euphoria, false dormer, call it whatever you like, of the craziness of what happens with the naming rights of Finch Farmer. I just thought that was hilarious. I don't know whether anything will come from it. I don't really care. I just thought it was funny, and it was what social media was made for. Take that out of the mix, take everything that's gone and happened. I think that we'd be hard pushed, I think, to realistically expect much more in terms of position from this Everton side this season. But having said that, I think the way we play sometimes is just horrific. The way Everton go about themselves, conduct themselves in games, intensity was a thing Neil mentioned there. That's a big thing that's been missing. We're an ageing squad in general. We're a squad that desperately lacks quality. And with a squad that has too many players you think they're better than what they actually are, is what needs to be addressed.
It's the 6 and 7 out of 10s, and you need more 8s and 9s out of 10s in games.
Yeah, well, it's probably lower than that, Connor, in terms of you're finding consistent levels, but the consistent levels of 5s, 6s are players are peaking at. I was looking at the Sky website before, because they've done Merseyside versus Manchester this weekend, and they've picked out the best Merseyside 11 against the best Manchester 11. And in the Merseyside 11, only 2 players get in, according to Sky statistics. Only 2 Everton players get in the Merseyside 11. And obviously, the one is Lukaku. The other obvious one doesn't get in there, which is Idrissa Gueye. Ashley Williams, according to their statistics, gets in. Well, in fact, I don't know how that happens. Somebody asked me what my opinion was of it, and I said, well, I would drop Williams, make 3 at the back, and I put Idrissa Gueye in midfield next to Jordan Henderson if I was going for the best 11. And I think Dan Vincent, who's a contributor on the Anfield Rap, said to me he'd have Matip in against instead of Lovren, which I don't think I've seen enough of them to comment on whether who I'd have out of those two. But that just puts it in perspective how poor this Everton side have been. But yet, we're still in 7th place, so I think there's a positivity to be taken from that. It's just the way we're going about getting results and picking up points. Massive game on Sunday, which I think will be a true test of where we come to. But my God, we need to get some players in really, really quickly.
I think it's really interesting with Everton in that now, and I think it doesn't suit the manager, and that's why I think that, you know, I haven't gone out the cup. The manager's very much, I still think, if you know, if you're asking me as an outsider or someone who sees a lot of Everton for whatever reason,
You're never an outsider.
I don't,
you will
no,
always
not an
be welcomed into Goodison open arms.
Well, I hope so, because it's a fantastic stadium. But there is... I think there's a massive, there's not a massive problem, there's a minor problem in terms of the fact that you still don't know what Ronald Koeman's football team looks like. Mm. And Ronald Koeman, if he was sitting here now, would say, well, I need another two windows and I'll show you that. But I still don't know what
it is
that
is. Patience in existence in
football, the more pertinent thing from what Neil's just said, he's absolutely right. We don't know what it looks like. The more pertinent thing, I think, is how long it's going to take to find out what a Ronald Koeman side looks like, and that onus needs to be put on the hierarchy at Everton and making decisions in terms of recruitment.
I wondered if a Ronald Koeman football team just looks like one that gets results, and I think that that's fine as long as you're hunting results down for a purpose.
Well, he's found a pragmatic way about things, Neil, in the last few weeks, which has impressed me. He's given younger players a goal, which everybody's been calling for. I wouldn't go as far as saying Tom Davis has been a revelation, but he's been a welcome addition in terms of energy.
Let me just interject ever so slightly there, because is that because he doesn't have any other option? Because we spoke about this on this show maybe 6 or 7 weeks ago, that he had said, listen, I'm not necessarily going to give the youth a chance. I have to get results here. Now, a lot of Everton fans have said it over the last couple of weeks. Calvert-Lewin went in and played. Tom Davis went in and played. From all reports, superb performances from Tom Davis. And we will be joined by his agent in a bit. We'll talk to him about that. But is that because there's nothing else there? And does that then, again, highlight the importance of this transfer window?
It's been particularly frustrating that it's got to that level before Koeman's tried those players out, because I think it's an issue we've seen for a while. Having said that, you give him the benefit of the doubt in the fact that he hasn't worked with these lads and he still finds them out and still sees the tried and tested formula as the one in which he thinks will yield results. That hasn't been the case. It's taken him a while to recognise that he needs that sort of influx of youth to get things going in recent weeks. I think Koeman has been, as a manager himself, since he's been at Everton, and I rob this quote from Paddy Boyland all the time, he's been lazy. There's been a lazy style of management from him. By that I mean, you look at the Merseyside derby, the go-to substitution is put Gareth Barry on when James McCarthy is injured. He needed to come up with something a little bit more clever to try and get something out of that game. He almost did. I mean, we were the width of a post or that ball going either way from getting a result, which is still extremely painful, by the way. But what he should be thinking of is, well, we've played an intense game so far. We've done okay. We've matched Liverpool in terms of intensity and being able to withhold the possession and energy in midfield with James McCarthy, who I thought was having a good game up until that point. But putting Gareth Barry on as a like-for-like change, I think, is very, very simple, basic form of management. He should have been thinking elsewhere. You've got Tom Davis on the bench there, who's, I'm sure, will be dying to make his Merseyside derby debut. You've got Gareth Barry, who's aging, he's leggy. You put him on, and the inevitable happened in the end. And I think that was a real punishment for what Koeman did. Since then, he's done similar things up until that Southampton game, where he did make changes. The changes he made for Hull, after we beat Leicester on Boxing Day, we went to Hull on the 30th, and he made several changes, put Gareth Barry in, and his simple answer when questioned about it before the game was, well, I expect us to have more possession in this game, so that's why Gareth Barry's included. I don't really accept that. I think if you get on a bit of a run,
then again, that's a change as well.
You dropped Mason Holgate as well, who did nothing wrong at Leicester. We kept a clean sheet.
But then again, it's football, I suppose, isn't it? And it's a little bit, it's the way it all sort of develops. We sat in the same studio 6 weeks ago and we told the world how brilliant Gareth Barry was.
But he is a brilliant player. Nobody's denying how good Gareth Barry is. The one thing we are saying is his fitness, intensity, energy at the age of 35, going on 36, is questionable. And that's all I'm saying. I have no doubt that Gareth Barry can come on and still run the show in a lot of games, but it's about managing his game time. Steven Gerrard had the same thing when he was coming towards the end at Liverpool. Ironically, Brendan Rodgers overplayed him in many situations then. I'm sure Neil would shed more light on that. But with Gareth Barry, it's very much the same. And I think that to sort of think, if Ronald Koeman's sitting there thinking, well, he's the answer to the problem here, I don't necessarily think he is in certain game situations. And at 0-0 in a very tense Merseyside derby isn't one of them. At a game away at Hull, where Hull have got a midfield that it lacks legs the same as ours, yet we start one and go like for like with them. Start Davis from the start, put, you know, Idrissa Gueye still there, put somebody else alongside him. the problem is in what I'm talking about here, Connor. After I say, give Tom Davies a start, I've got nobody else to offer to you who I could put in that midfield. And therein lies the problem, and that's what needs to be addressed now. He needs to go out. He wants a Morgan Schneiderlin since he's been at the club from day one. He needs to go and get him now. Right now.
Let's have a quick chat about the FA Cup, because I want to come back from the break in a few minutes and talk about Everton and last week being quite a momentous week in Everton's history. You know, lots of different things happening. The AGM happened, the stadium got a little bit closer. We have finances coming in to Finch Farm that weren't there 7 days ago. They're keeping everybody happy, and David Downey from the Blue Room is making lots of memes with their Russian influences in said memes, which is very funny in itself. What about Everton against Leicester on Saturday? From I was here doing the Game On show, so I was reporting on the goals. I didn't physically get to see them, but it seemed that Everton thought they were across the line, and then all of a sudden Leicester decided to start playing for a 10-minute period, and that was that.
Yeah, the attitude when we went 1-0 up stunk, quite frankly. We dropped, we thought we'd take it easy. They put somebody on with an abundance of pace who ultimately destroyed our legged back four. And certain players need to have a look at themselves. I looked at them after the game and they looked dejected and like they'd let themselves down, because I think they saw this as a bit of a free ride, and the attitude at Everton for many, many years now with cup competitions has been appalling, to say the least. I think that's a fair thing to say. They simply seems to be this misconception that Everton should be a good cup side. I completely agree they should be, but the attitude towards said trophies needs to change as well. We're desperate for the trophy. I've said to you many times, I'd take Everton finishing just about staying up in the Premier League, but winning a trophy, it's become that ridiculous now. The monkey on the back has become...
But you don't seem as frustrated today as the day after Norwich beat Everton in the League Cup. You were really frustrated that day.
Yeah, because, well, I don't know, I suppose it's sort of...
Leicester are champions for one.
Yeah, but you subliminally start to expect it at a single point. And again, Neil could tell you a lot about that mentality that I've probably had for many years in terms of
there's a cult. I think there's a cultural issue with
Everton
around this.
There is, but
I think there's a cultural issue with Everton about this, which is, again, something which I don't understand why it's not drilled into the whoever the next new manager is on day one, which is what Dave just said, which is that there's a strong strata Evertonian opinion, which is we'll take 17th in a trophy. Now I disagree with that. I don't think that's the right mentality to have, but the point being is that it should be the top priority, and it should be made clear to Koeman it's if you think the league's important, you're right, but you're probably not going to win that, so therefore the League Cup and we're giving you a pass on that. When we say giving you a pass, what we mean is put your energies into winning that, into winning one of those two. And I think that one of the reasons why you're probably more annoyed with the Norwich one is because there was more clear evident resting with a capital R for Norwich, less so for the Leicester one. But regardless, Everton shouldn't be going out of any cup competition with a whimper. They will go out of cup competitions, but they shouldn't be going out with a whimper, and that's what happened at Goodison Park.
Right, stay with us in a second.
Can I just add one thing?
Yes, very quickly.
What Neil's talking about there in terms of Koeman should be valuing the competition highly and he should be drilled into them from day one. Farhad Moshiri come out in the AGM and said, yeah, it's all about the league. So read into that what you will.
Super lead into what we're going to be talking about in a second. I want to talk about Farhad Moshiri. I want to talk about the AGM from during the week as well. I want to talk about the reaction of some Everton fans from the AGM, and also about the FA Cup as well. But lads, it's a Monday evening. I'm joined by some of my favourite human beings in the world of radio/sport.
Excellent news.
It's only fair that I throw a teaser up to you for 2017. Right, Jeff.
Yanni Litmanen.
Yeah. Regular fans of the show will know that's about. And if you don't, get on to Audio Boom and have a little listen back to All in the Games, and that joke will make perfect sense to you. Right, here's a question for you. Right, Lucas Leiva.
Oh, aye.
Played for Liverpool yesterday against Plymouth in the FA Cup. And he now holds the most appearances by a Brazilian in the Premier League. Okay. I want to find out who holds the most appearances from a German, an Italian, a Spaniard, and a Frenchman.
Pen and paper, please.
Okay,
Colin.
Pen and paper to yourselves. You can write that down. The most Premier League, or beg your pardon, the most English league, English, the most English appearances by a German. And
most English appearances.
Bear with me.
English leagues.
Bear with me.
Leagues.
I am going to go for Premier League. Yes, indeed.
Okay.
Who has made the most Premier League appearances from Germany, Italy, Spain, France? And obviously the Brazilian answer is Lucas Leiva. Okay. You got them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to know who has made the most Premier League appearances from those countries. You can, I'll stick it up on Twitter now, at Radio City Talk. You can play along for fun, at home, no prize, apart from my unending love. Right, coming up in a second. We'll have a chat about the AGM from an Everton perspective. We'll also have a little look at Liverpool against Plymouth as well, and the best of the rest right here on Radio City Talk.
Full time with Conor Phillips. With the Heating and Bathroom Centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
It's Radio City Talk. It is 5:27 and we have got a football show stuck in the middle of a radio show. It is All in the Game. I'm joined in the studio by football agent and general expert. And as I said in 2016, I continue to say it in 2017, the man with the most beautiful hair in radio, Neil Sang, joins me on Radio City Talk. David Downey, a man...
I want to put him on a pedestal, but he's got a great head of hair for a man of his age, as we now used to say.
A man whose hair is slowly dwindling.
Yeah. I'm going to come to David Downey.
Back.
I'm going to come to David Downey, who is literally half the man he was this time last year, looking very svelte and fit from the blue room, and Neil Atkinson from the multi-award winning Anfield Rap, and a man who had admitted at the start of the show he's lost his wallet.
It's been found.
Has it been found?
It's been found. It was in the office.
What do you call that big place where they hide all the gold? what do you call that big place with the vault in it?
Oh, Fort Knox.
Fort Knox. It has been found and returned to Fort Knox forthwith here.
Yeah, the bath and the dog, I was like...
Oh, come on, get on with this quiz, will you?
It is Radio City Talk, right? We posed a question a couple of seconds ago with Lucas Leiva. He is now the most capped, if that's the right word. He's appeared in the Premier League more than any other Brazilian on planet Earth, right? So I've been asking you, who has appeared in the Premier League more times from a German, Italian, Spanish and French perspective, right? So basically, who's made the most appearances in the Premier League from Germany, from Italy, from Spain, from France? Right, lads, I am happy to field your theories on this.
So I think we've nailed the German one.
Okay.
Dietmar Hamann.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, so... First guess is then for France, we'll go for Vieira.
Okay.
Italy, we'll go Zola.
Uh-huh.
Neil's come up with an absolutely fantastic, right from, it's straight out of left field, this shout, Angel Rangel for the most capped Spaniard. How many have we got right?
You've got one correct.
That's got to be Hamann. I'm the most
Rangel,
confident.
No, because Swansea played loads outside the Premier League, don't forget.
Of course, you won't be counting the lower leagues. Okay, then it'd probably be, it could well be Reina then for the Spaniard.
It's Zola or Hamann that we've got right, I think.
Okay.
I'm pretty confident. Would you say Zola's the one to pin your hopes
Zola
on?
Zola or Hamann. I feel like there's an Italian we're forgetting. There's an Italian
what
somewhere that's just wrapped up.
Was it Wipeout with. Was it Paul Daniels who played.
You like
Wipeout?
It? Not a lot, but you
was
like it.
What game was it where you got, like, you had the lights and you had to pick which ones. We're right in the category. You go back, you press the button, and it'll tell you that four were right.
Oh, yeah.
We question the sport now. Yeah, but there was a game show about it.
If anybody has a theory on that... It was Wipeout 01517081059.
I'm sure it was called Wipeout, not Total Wipeout. Wipeout.
Right.
Total Wipeout was the water game.
Yeah, the crazy one with Richard.
Ah, yes. This is what I suspected we'd be talking about when we come back after the break.
Good
as
game show
per usual.
Well, come on then, is Zola the one we got right?
Shall I tell you? Do you want to know the ones you got
country
right?
Country by country, yeah. We want to know what's right.
Is that? Do you think I should do that? Tell you what I'll do, right, very quickly. I'm going to take some headlines from Becky Davis, and then I'm going to make up my mind whether I tell you which one was right individually. You're listening to All in the Game on Radio City Talk. I'm Conor Phillips, and we're here until 6:30 this evening. Before we do anything else, let's see what's happening on the rest of planet Earth. Here's Becky with a quick update.
A £10,000 reward's been offered by police as they try to find the murderers of a Liverpool man in 2009. It's the 8th anniversary of Sean Finnan's death. The 22-year-old from Chilwell was attacked in Stockbridge Village as he looked for his younger brother's stolen bike and died in hospital 4 days later. Security's been stepped up at Liverpool striker Roberto Firmino's home after burglars stole £70,000 worth of items. His house in Mossley Hill was targeted on the 22nd of December, only a few days before he was charged with drink driving. Two men have been arrested after a 15-year-old girl from Lancashire died from an allergic reaction to an Indian takeaway. Megan Lee died on New Year's Day. The men have been questioned on suspicion of involuntary manslaughter by gross negligence. And Liverpool's Philippe Coutinho could feature against Southampton in the League Cup on Wednesday. He took part in full training again this morning as he comes back from an ankle injury. Coutinho hasn't played since the end of November.
This is Radio City Talk Sport.
In transfer news this evening, Southampton manager Claude Puel has confirmed that captain Jose Font will not be part of the squad to face Liverpool in the EFL Cup semi-final on Wednesday. The 33-year-old defender, who has 18 months left in his current contract, handed in a transfer request on Thursday, with the Saints director of football, Les Reed, admitting that Font wanted to explore opportunities for a transfer. Font joined Southampton in 2010 from Crystal Palace. He was also absent for Saturday's FA Cup draw against Norwich, and Puel has decided to leave him out for the first leg at St Mary's, although the Frenchman refused to rule out selecting the Portugal international in the near future. I can confirm Joe's news. Philippe Coutinho will return to the Liverpool squad for the first time in more than 6 weeks for the EFL cup final against Southampton. Manager Jurgen Klopp has confirmed, and I can bring you news as well this afternoon that Omar Nias is on his way from Everton to Hull for an initial loan, and it could be a permanent deal should things remain correctly. Should he do well? Should he have a good season? 0151 708 1059 on the phone this afternoon, or you can tweet us as well at Radio City Talk.
Full time with Connor Phillips, with the Heating and Bathroom Centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
Right, you are listening to Radio City Talk. This is All in the Game. I'm Connor Phillips, joined in the studio by the brilliant Neil Atkinson, the wonderful David Downey, and Neil Sang joins me as well here this evening on Radio City Talk. He's also exceptionally wonderful as well. I'm feeling very positive this evening. I don't
hugely,
know what it is.
Hugely.
I don't know why I'm feeling... Right, I asked you a question a couple of seconds ago, right? That question was, it is Lucas Leiva is the Brazilian player who's made the most Premier League appearances. Who is the German player, Italian player, Spanish player and French player who can also say they have that to their name? Right, let me see. Neil sent me a tweet. Neil says that it's...
Not me, or Sang.
A different yeah. Neil. This is Spuddy. Thank you, Spuddy.
Too many Neils.
He is saying a wonderful name. Let me see. He is saying Arteta, Gallas, Haman and Zola.
Arteta could be a great shot there.
Gallas is a good shout as well. Well in.
He Arteta also, since 2005 and retired last year. That's 10 years.
Neil on Twitter, like Neil and Dave in the studio, has got one correct as well. He said Arteta, Gallas, Haman and Zola.
Ah, so Haman or Zola are correct then, because we've got one right.
I can't believe that either of them are wrong, to be honest.
Okay, I am going to tell you which one you've got correct.
Go on.
Right.
Dietmar Haman, I'm saying.
Dietmar Haman is not the player with the most appearances in the Premier League from Germany. The player from Italy with the most appearances in the Premier League is Gianfranco Zola. Mm. So you can strike his name off of that.
So if that's not Jens Lehmann, it might be somebody like Hitzlsperger or someone like that, who had maybe 8 or 10 years at Aston Villa.
Injured a lot though, wasn't he?
Yeah, good shout there.
Right,
as well.
So we're still waiting on Germany, we're waiting on Spain, we're waiting on France. It's a good question.
Fabregas for Spain's my shout.
Okay.
Broke in as a 17-year-old, Arsenal, at 18 months away back at Barca. Could be a shout for me.
You have got two correct.
Thank you, sir.
Well played, young sir.
Excellent stuff.
So two down, two to go. It is 5:35. Just very quickly, because we'll talk about Liverpool in a second. Dave, while you are here, I just wanted to talk. We can put 5 minutes aside for the AGM, because we can let it run on after 6 o'clock. We don't have to go deep into the other FA Cup games. The AGM seemed to be quite positive. Some negatives to come out of the Everton AGM as well. It looks like the stadium is progressing, is probably the best word we can use. On top of that, it looks like a few quid coming in from your Russian friends as well, which could do Everton wonders too. Mm. I questioned the other day when I was speaking to Al Bretland from the Mail that Everton are selling the naming rights to Finch Farm. What is it? Is 75 million over 5 years?
Yeah.
I questioned about why they're doing it the way in which they're doing it, right? Because Mr. Usmanov from Arsenal, his holdings company, which also has got an affiliation to the aforementioned Mashiri, is that correct?
Yeah, Mashiri is a shareholder in USM Holdings.
In US. And they said they're going to pay a certain amount of money, and they're going to sponsor that, and Everton are going to have 75 million into their coffers. It means financially, fair play wise, it's done correctly. Now, I made the point the other day on this very show that bringing Usman. Look, Atkinson's got his phone out again. He's looking for the answers.
I'm not. He's not got his phone out.
Is that his phone behind there?
Oh, no, I'm just looking at his leg.
That's all right. I'm just. I'm so used to it. I just think that.
He paranoid you.
I'm just saying that Usmanov coming in, being involved with Arsenal, and then linking himself to Everton, either officially or unofficially, it's messy. And I said it the other day on the show, when Everton fans criticise me for being negative about something that's so positive in the world of Everton. Lads, I'd love your thoughts on this, the three of you.
Well, it's not positive yet. It's what it could potentially be. I agree it's a little bit messy and murky and...
Now, I didn't use the word murky. I just said messy.
Well, I'm saying murky because... But it's everything Everton haven't been, so that's why it's exciting. Because I was having a conversation with somebody on Twitter about this, and he said Everton need to be... still maintain their reputation and be whiter than white and stuff like that. Do you know what? I've had enough anguish, frustration and downright despair as an Evertonian. I don't really care. As long as if it gives us a load of money to go and buy players, if it gets us around financial fair play, I don't really care anymore. Ethics in football don't exist to a certain extent.
So let's
Shangi will tell you more about that.
Let's talk to the man who knows about finances and football. Agent Neil Sang joins me, as he does regularly here on Radio City Talk. So, normally when a product is strong enough, what they do is, a club's strong enough, a product or company jump on the back of that company, of that football team, get some sort of publicity from it, and they pay a sponsorship deal. This is a bit different, the fact that the money is coming in from a company that is linked to a different football club. Is messy the right word?
Complicated might be a word I'd use, but what I would... The overriding word for me is phenomenal. To get 75 million quid to sponsor your training ground is a deal and three quarters. I mean, people are looking now. I mean, I was, I think it was last May or June, I was in touch with the chief executive of arguably the biggest cricket club on the planet in Yorkshire, in terms of number of fans and size of county, etc., etc., etc. They've toiled for years to get a naming rights to Headingley Stadium. You know, not many Premier League clubs have got the naming rights to their first team stadium.
That hosts international cricket as well, Sandy, doesn't it?
Of course, exactly. Yeah. Of course it does, and it's a major stage on the cricket, on the cricket world stage. It's a major name. It's a major stadium. So to get that type of money, I mean, that's a really, really good footballer every year for 5 years. Mm. If you're delving into the transfer market. I wouldn't look at the inner workings of it. If it's passed, if that cheque clears, it means the FA are fine with it, the Premier League are fine with it. Embrace it.
Right, well,
phenomenal.
Look, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to Neil Atkinson for a very specific reason. Now, hello to all the Everton fans who decided to send me a selection of different, let's just say, views on an interview I did last week.
That was just me.
With Elliot Bretland from the Daily Mail. What I said was...
It was just me giving you the abuse. That's
well, I'm just using that rhetoric that Neil Sang, the football agent, has brought to me. He says, look, get it done, check clears, it's all good. Now, Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap. Now, I did not compare Usmanov and Mashiri to Hicks and Gillette. I made the point, I don't want to do this, but just let that be a caveat. You know what it's like as a Liverpool fan, knowing that money was on its way. Checks were signed, checks were cleared, and things didn't go to plan for Liverpool pre the Henry era that we're in at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have a message for Everton from that perspective? Or do you think it's, like Sangi, do you think it's, look, take the money and just get your players in and look for success?
I'd have the same message as I'd have to any set of football supporters really now, which is you've got to be vigilant. And my worry about Everton's AGM was that it had too many bells and whistles. If you want a cynical thing from the outside, there was too many bells and whistles in there. Now, this can just be me being cynical, and I'm more than happy to be written off as being cynical, but my experience of this sort of stuff is that when there's tons and tons and tons of bells and whistles, if things aren't then evidently in straight lines, then wonder why they're in curves. And this is a curve. No matter which way you want to look at it, this is a curve. And why it needs to be a curve, I'm not very clear on. I'm still, to me, the Usmanov sort of machinery, the bits and pieces on it, it's not me worried that Everton are going to become ridiculously rich and overtake Liverpool. And before I know where I am, I'm looking at Everton have won seven leagues and they've got a big stadium on the dock. Variety of reasons why that's the case. One of them is that it's a massive gap that Everton have got to make up, and financial fair play puts tons and tons. And I understand Dave saying you get round it, but you can't. There's everyone's got to abide by it to some degree now. There's some clever ways around Chelsea with the loan strategies, for instance. That's a curve again. Why is it a curve? Well, this is why it's a curve. This is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to make up financial fair play and how we're going to get around
that's
it.
That's a loophole, what they've done so far.
That's massively a loophole, yeah, that's what I mean. So that, what I'm using that as an example of,
right, okay.
that you've got to find them in some way, but I'd say to anyone, if you don't know what an ownership's made of, and I don't think Everton know yet what this ownership's made of, you know, you can, one of the ways you can look at Chelsea is that Abramovich has been there for however long now, and so on and so forth. I think that Everton supporters should be vigilant, and but I think you should be vigilant anyway. Liverpool supporters should be vigilant. Everyone should be vigilant, because these are cultural institutions that people get to come in, take over, ride roughshod over. And it's not about reputations or about being whiter than white. It's back to the idea that you wouldn't have let the government wouldn't have let Hicks and Gillette run Speak Hall. It's that straightforward to why they're allowed to run Liverpool Football Club. Mm. And you've got to look at the chap currently at Leeds. He wouldn't be allowed to run Speak Hall. He's allowed to run Leeds. Mm. And then you've got to go right the way through. And we're in a situation where this stuff, this respect and admiration, it's got to be earned over a period of time and not just done a couple of quick fixes, an AGM and a bit of a checkbook waving exercise.
Right, Everton fans, we'd love to hear from your views. 01517 08 1059 at Radio City Talk. Send me a tweet. The question is still out there for the lads. Lucas Leiva is now the Brazilian that has more appearances in the Premier League than any other Brazilian on planet Earth. Who represents that from a German, an Italian, a Spanish and a French perspective? Now, we can take Italy out of it, because we did say Gianfranco Zola, and we can take Spain out of it because we did say it was Cesc Fabregas. France and Germany, please, gentlemen, and Liverpool talk coming up next.
Full time with Colin Phillips. With the Heating and Bathroom Centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
It's Radio Test City Talk. It is 5:47. This is All in the Game. 90 minutes every Monday evening. We focus on all the big footballing stories from during the weekend. I'm joined by Neil Sang, football agent. I'm joined by David Downey from the Blue Room and Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap. Right, before the break, I asked you who has played the most games in the Premier League from Germany, Italy, Spain, France, because in Brazil it is Lucas Leiva, or Lucas as we call him, playing yesterday in the FA Cup. So, let me go through some of the tweets here. You have decided the two you're going with is Italy is...
Zola.
Spain.
Fabregas.
Okay, Don, thank you for that one. You get that one absolutely right. Neil says, for France, is it... Can I do it? Patrice Evra. It's not Patrice Evra. And Paul Bennett, if you're listening, I tip my hat to you. And that's all I'm saying. Okay, right. So keep them coming in. Have you any further views on that one, right? So we've already established that the Italian with the most appearance in the Premier League is Zola. And the Spaniard is Cesc Fabregas. I'm very, very, very careful not to read out the wrong names here. We're left with two. Germany and France. Okay, any ideas?
Has Vieira been taken off the table here?
It's off the table.
My shout was Henry.
It's off the table.
But I think there's going to be a
Marcel Desailly.
It's off the table.
I did think of David Ginola.
It's off the table.
Oh, yeah. 90s players for France. Yeah. Frank Leboeuf.
Better Cantona.
Cantona is
not early,
isn't he? Right, so keep them coming in.
Are we having Jens Lehmann for Germany?
Can you have him? You can, but it's not the right answer.
Okay. Christian Caramba. Oh.
Did he play enough games? Middlesbrough?
Loads of them.
Did he?
Yeah, did a few seasons.
Didn't play enough.
I'm not saying he did enough for the purposes of this game.
Fabian Barthez? No, not Barthez.
I only know him for a model wife, I think, Carambo.
I'm becoming concerned.
As a footballer.
I'm becoming concerned it's going to be that kind of player, though.
Exactly.
Let me just check.
Sylvain Distan.
No on both accounts. No.
Not Sylvain Distan?
So, Sylvain Distan's your answer?
Yeah.
Great shout.
Nah. Well done, son.
So, Sylvain Distan is the Frenchman with the most Premier
League
appearances.
That German one's got me, though, I've got to say. The first line I'm thinking I've got is it's a German national player.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
And I can't think of that many. Yeah. Babel never played enough.
So the question. Well, listen, we better get on to Liverpool because we've nearly done flipping 40 minutes on Everton. Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap joins me. Yesterday, Liverpool 0, Plymouth Argyle 0. Liverpool making a range of changes. Mm-hmm. Everyone from Loris Karius. We had. We could go through all the team, but it was a youthful team. As exposed yesterday, it was the youngest ever side that Liverpool have ever put out during a competitive game. So many different views coming across after the game from fans going, how dare they not play the full-strength squad? I paid X amount of money to go and watch them.
It was only £14.
To fans going, Liverpool let fans in for £14. What do you expect? Right through to, it's okay. We'll have another opportunity, another shot at this. But it's another game, ultimately, that Liverpool don't need.
It is another game that Liverpool don't need, but I don't expect any I'd be stunned if, to be honest with you, I think it might be the same 11 that goes to Plymouth Argyle with a far weaker bench, and maybe not even with Emre Can, given when that game's going to fall. I think Liverpool are going to go with, as I say, with the same lads again, and that'll be the attitude. It was the attitude last season against Exeter home and away, and I expect to see a little different, to be honest with you. I think Liverpool, sadly, not sadly, I don't, in fact, I wouldn't say sadly, Liverpool have got bigger fish to fry, and it's called the Football League. And as far as I'm concerned, all energy should be lashed into that. Now, listen, if we get to this fifth, sixth round of the Cup, things might be a little bit different. If we get to the fifth, sixth round of the Cup and we can no longer win the league, things
so
might be different.
How do you perceive the semi-final this Wednesday?
Well, I think he's going to play a relatively strong side in the semi-final, but part of the reason why I think he's going to do that is actually as part of prep for playing United. I think Klopp, as someone said to me today, and I agree with Adam on our show, says Klopp talks loads about players getting in rhythm, and I think his attitude will be, right, you're using the Southampton game to get in rhythm for the Manchester United game. And that's, you know, if anything, Liverpool have been a little bit short of rhythm over the Christmas period for a variety of factors, the players who are missing, who aren't fully fit, the fact that the games came thick and fast. And I think Liverpool haven't attacked as well in November and December as they did in October, and I think that Klopp will be looking to get that, to get on top of that pretty soon, and the return of Coutinho, Sturridge coming back to full fitness, I think all Lallana being back in play. Yes, there's no Mane, but I think all of that will be seen as a reason. But I expect Liverpool, you know, I'm sure if Jurgen Klopp is sitting here right now and you said you can have a guaranteed win away at Southampton or a guaranteed win away at Manchester United, he'd say Manchester United all day. And I think the other reason for that as well is that, you know, we've got a second leg to come against Southampton. If we're one goal down after the first leg against Southampton, we bring them back to Anfield, you can still win the game. And that game, by the way, falls between the fourth round of the Cup, if we get there, against Plymouth, and Swansea at home, which you'd think at the moment is as straightforward a game as you're going
to
get.
Looking at the FA Cup, right, surely, I spoke to Mick Coyle's producer, Lizzie, earlier on. She made some really good points to me. She said, look, it's about winning trophies. It has to be, right? There are still, well, this is the opinion of, I suppose it is my opinion to a degree, from a Liverpool perspective. It's about winning trophies. Klopp knows how to play in cups, as he has shown, right? There is one of five, potentially six teams are going to be in there around for the Premier League. The League Cup's going to be difficult. It's going to be Manchester United in the final. None of the teams at this stage are going to be a gimme, obviously. So by saying that the same 11, the youngest a team ever to put on a Liverpool shirt is going to go to Plymouth, is it not being a little bit disrespectful to the cup? Is it not being...
No.
Then if you're using the rhythm argument, then surely you bring the players in, you let them play. Is your fear that it's going to be another Christmas?
Firstly, you've got a situation where you've got a ton of young players who actually need to get time on the pitch, and it has to happen at some point. And if it can't happen at home against Plymouth, then I don't know when it does happen. If you rate them and if you're taking them seriously, then they get time on the pitch. So that's an important thing. And Jurgen Klopp, you know, you look at his interview with Jonathan Northcroft over the weekend, he clearly rates his young players and he wants to see them brought through. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is, the idea that all trophies are equal is absolutely exhausting, and it's one of the reasons we've ended up in this mess with no leagues for 26 years. Liverpool need to win the Football League. Once they've won it, then we can get into a situation where we can say, for instance, well, this year, you know, I'd like to see us have a push on all fronts and all this sort of stuff. But the only way Liverpool get... The monkey that is on Liverpool's back was on Liverpool's back in 2006 when they won the FA Cup, that they hadn't won the league since 1990. It's now another 11 years on since then. And I'd love to be able to say, like the old days, you know, we win the League Cup and we go on and we win the league and we show them what it's like in London and we go down and we lift the FA Cup and all of that sort of stuff. But none of it will truly matter until another Football League's in the cabinet. Now, if this season Liverpool win the league and then next season they do the League Cup and the FA Cup double and they get to the semi-finals of the Champions League and they come second in the league, you can turn around and say, you know what, really good season, lads, all the best. But the Football League has got to be in that cabinet. And when the opportunity comes for it, which it has right now, next season it might not come, there might be a tough start, an injury crisis, things might go wrong. Right now Liverpool are second in the table with 18 games to go. This stuff is serious.
He comes in and he changes my mind. How do you do this, Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Rap, turning around my views in literally 90 seconds of radio? Sangi, I want to push you on this one here. We've got about a minute and a half before we have to go to the news. Like Neil said there now, with the youngsters getting game time, I think that was a really good point, really important point, that what's the point in having a squad? What's the point in having these competitions if you cannot, at some stage, give your youngsters a chance? Kevin Stewart, they won't let him go out and loan. Similarly to the way in which Tom Davis hasn't been allowed to go out and loan at Everton. Yep. He's getting his opportunity now. How important is a game like yesterday for the Alexander Arnolds, for the aforementioned Kevin Stewart getting games, for Ojo and stuff?
Yeah, massive. Absolutely massive. And here's the thing. The thing that I've found with younger players over all the years I've been doing this job is that loads of them are really good at football. Loads and loads of them. Right? So, but here's the differentiator. Loads of them can't handle a big crowd. And Liverpool Football Club is a monstrous club. And there's 55,000 people now go to Anfield. And you'll go and play in front of 75,000 at Old Trafford, etc., etc. So it's okay sending them out on loan. And that's really vital. And I'm a massive, massive fan of that. But you'll only truly know unless you stick them in front of their own punters on a live, you know, live match. It was, you know, going to millions and millions of people, and you see their mentality. You see how they handle it. You know, Woodburn misses a volley badly in the second half. Great from the young kid. He didn't care. He chased back. He didn't demonstrate. He didn't go in his shell. He kept asking for the ball. I think he got taken off maybe 5 or 10 minutes after it. But I watched his. That was really important for me. So little things like that.
Ajari as well.
Ajari, you know, you're looking at these kids and you're going, yes, you're great at football. Can you do it in front of a big crowd? And that's the thing that Liverpool, that they need to know that. So to me, it was the prime opportunity. And as well, if they can't go up against the Plymouth, no disrespect to Plymouth. They got some really, really good lads and really good footballers.
Many of them too, aren't they?
No, yeah, exactly. And they were unlucky
last
year. Best
away record in the football league, all four footballing leagues, apart from Newcastle, I believe.
Yeah, you know what? Great club, Sleeping Giants. I've done lots of business down there. It's a fantastic club. But if Liverpool's kids want to get into Liverpool's first team, they should be able to go and beat Plymouth.
Right, let me know what you think on this. 01517 0810 59. Thanks to Neil, thanks to Paul, thanks to Briscoe. Well played, young sir. So we've already established that Gianfranco Zola, Cesc Fabregas, Sylvain Distan and Lucas Leiva have played the most matches in the Premier League coming from their country. So we're left with Germany. You've got a wry smile on your face. I don't want to know why.
I've got it, that's why.
Give us your German answer. We'll get it from you. Oh, you can't. You right, okay.
Let me tell you who I think.
Klinsmann!
Yeah, he's wanted to go through. Robert Huth.
There you go. That's a shout.
Find out if he's right after this.
This is Radio City Talk. Rock, sport and talk for Liverpool.
Now. Full time on Radio City Talk.
It's Radio City Talk, 3 minutes after six. I'm Connor Phillips. You're listening to All In The Game. We're talking about the weekend's football action. We're talking about all the headlines in the world of football as well. And I'm joined by a selection of experts. Neil Sang, football agent, football expert, if you like. Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap and David Downey from the Blue Room, the Everton-based show, which is here every single Wednesday evening between 6:30 and 7:30. And incidentally, the Anfield Wrap here every Friday between the same time, 6:30 and 7:30. Right. Let me confirm exactly what we did a couple of minutes ago. I asked you at the start of the show, gentlemen, about after Lucas Leiva came off the park yesterday, I did a bit of fishing around on his own stats, if you like, and found out Lucas Leiva has made more Premier League appearances for a Brazilian than any other Brazilian that has ever walked planet Earth. Good stat. So I decided to hook out some other European countries and see if we could get the same and we could ask you which were who is the German that made the most Premier League appearances, the Italian, the Spaniard and the Frenchman. And do you think he's have completed it?
I think we know we have, Neil, don't we?
We have indeed. Downey's boxed it off. He's got the... it was a team effort.
All right, then let's go through them. So Lucas Leiva, obviously, he's made more appearances as a Brazilian than anyone else in the Premier League. Okay, let's go Germany.
Robert Huth from Downey.
What a great shout from David Downey. Although, particularly suspicious that he got that right. Now he's not in the studio at the moment. He got that right just as a couple of tweets came in with that right answer, right? And I know that Downey's phone and watch are both linked to the Radio City Talk Twitter account. I am not saying he did anything incorrect.
His watch.
He's got one of those.
Is he like James Bond?
He's got one of those funky
one
things.
Of those, aye.
Oh, look at that. More money than sense, la. Right, and Italy, the Italian.
That was an Atkinson shout.
Zola.
Gianfranco Zola, very well
done.
Spain, this was
a Neil Sang shout. Fabregas.
It is indeed. And the one that I thought was the most impressive one, and this was pure David Downey. He wasn't even looking at his watch or his phone. The Frenchman with the most Premier League appearances.
Sylvain Distan.
Really impressed with that.
That great was an impressive shout. Yeah.
Cracking show. We'll do another one next week. If you sent me a tweet in, let me just go through a few of these. Thanks to Lisa, to Nicola. Nicola wants to say well done, Neil, for your little rant there on the league being more important than the cups.
Oh, good.
Neil sent
not all trophies are equal. If not, we go and win the Johnstone's paint.
Right. Neil, Neil said with a couple of smiley faces he likes it. Paul Bennett, thank you very much for your help this evening. There's a couple of lads on Twitter as well having a bit of crack with each other. And let me see. JJ, Connor, you definitely compared Everton, the setup, to Hicks and Gillette. I'd like to say, well said to Sangi and Dave there from JJ for all the points you made just before the news. Keep the tweets coming in at Radio City Talk, and no matter how many times people tweet that Thierry Henry has made the most appearances for a Frenchman, it's still not the right answer, okay? So many people tweeting that in from an Henry perspective. Lads, just let's talk a wee bit more about Liverpool yesterday because and the cup ahead as well. A really good point made by Neil there before the news that not all cups are equal. Then, if we use that rhetoric, then how do we approach the Southampton game at St Mary's? Do you play a slightly weakened side?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I think
it's a semi-final of the cup, though.
It's fine. I still both balls, so it's two legs. It's two legs, and I think that the next thing that happens is that you get to say, well, if we ended up being a goal behind come the second leg, then you go from there. And I think you'll see it in terms of who's rushed back. Like, for instance, Matip, I doubt he'll be rushed back to play centre-half against Southampton and then play against United. Mm-hmm. Coutinho, he's funny with Coutinho. He does sometimes throw him in again, I think, because he wants to give him rhythm and get him ready. So he might just chuck Coutinho in. But I think that, for instance, Coutinho will probably be used from the bench. I think he'll want to play a stronger side.
So sorry to cut across you. To say get him ready there, that kind of sums up... Is that your thinking? Get him ready for the Man United League match. And that's the priority.
It should
here.
Be, yeah, of course it's the priority. I mean, it's got to be the priority. Whilst Liverpool are in the position that they're in, then there can only be one priority this season. If I'll keep saying it, if Liverpool then win the league and think that thing is solved, then everything becomes different. But I think there's too many people who in their heads, it's still 1988 and every trophy matters. And that's just simply not the case. For the reputation of the club, for instance, go into next season's Champions League as the champions of England, if Liverpool do manage to get into the Champions League and obviously win the league. You know, this stuff matters. Liverpool have had too many seconds that have then led to struggling. And I don't think that...
To seventh
and things.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because it takes loads to win the league. No one's retained this league now for 8 years. It's going to be 8 seasons this season. No one's retained it. No one's retained it this decade because it takes loads of emotional and physical exertion. And if you don't get the prize at the end of it and you don't get the open top bus journey and all that sort of stuff, then it's quite difficult to get your lads back in and say, right, we go again. Mm-hmm. Now, I think Klopp could do that. But my point is more... It's here and now. And if you're going to say to me, you know, Neil, you don't need to worry, 5 of the next 6 seasons, Liverpool on 30 games are going to be on 65 points, and then we just go from there and we'll win it in one of them, that's fine, but I don't know that right now. But what I do know is that right now Liverpool are second, they're 5 points off the pace. They go to Old Trafford, it's the hardest time of the season to go to Old Trafford. It's going to be a really difficult game for the Reds, but if they were to get 1 or 3 points, it'd be a terrific result. 3 would be absolutely fantastic. They take the 3 points and they'll feel top of the world, and then I expect them to beat Swansea, and then they play Chelsea at home in the next league game.
To use that, right, what happens then if Liverpool don't pick up all 3 points? United are in a good run of form. They're playing quite well at Old Trafford. Mourinho seems to have found something. What happens if they don't pick up all those 3 points and you haven't given the full attention to the Southampton match? Southampton aren't having a great run of form themselves at the moment. They need something. This could be their day tomorrow. Liverpool go a couple of goals behind. And all of a sudden, you go from a position where we are today, where Liverpool are second in the league, in the FA Cup, in the League Cup, and then we could be within a batch of days out of the FA Cup if Plymouth play, you know, a more attacking style of football down at Plymouth. If Southampton get a decent result, because we're resting players, like Neil is saying there, all of a sudden, you've no cups, and you're beaten by United in the league, and you're 9 points off Chelsea.
I still think the same thing applies, because it's... You know, Chelsea have got to go to some big clubs as well. Don't forget, they've probably got half a dozen really, really important games as well, where anything can happen there. You've seen them come up against Tottenham and were comfortably beaten from my eyes on the night. So they're not home free yet. So I think the same thing applies. I think this season with Liverpool being out of Europe as well, I think it's one of those where you just give it absolutely all for the push and for the league. And if you get it, great. And if you don't, I don't think you can ever plan on all these if, buts and maybes. Connor, I think if you're setting your stall off to the start, you say, what are we going for? What's our aim, boys? And we go, well, We've got to win the league here, Gaffer. Okay. Jürgen Klopp's going to be saying, well, let's go with that. His directive will be, we win that. The board of directors, the fans, everyone else, I think, is aligned that they want to win the league. So you don't waver. You don't have plan B or plan C, because that takes your eyes off plan A. Mm. And again, I agree wholeheartedly with Neil. It's plan A, and throw everything at it.
Good point. If you feel free to get in touch, 01517 08 1059, feel free, go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, you can't. I think that, all plots lead to death in that, you know, Liverpool either win this league and everything looks as though it all worked perfectly all the way through, or they don't and you get to go, well, you should have done X, Y, or Z differently, both in terms of the league and also in terms of other cup competitions. But the fact is that Liverpool are in with not just a sniff, in with a really good sniff at the moment, the second favourites, the second in the table. They look like the side who look most likely to be able to put a proper run together and to win the games that matter to a certain extent, and they also look like the side who look least likely to go anywhere. What I mean by that is Chelsea could still get 95 points, United could still get 92 points.
Definitely.
I expect, though, more than anyone else, I feel as the Liverpool are the side who are most likely to get somewhere between 80 and 90, if you know what I mean. Mm. They look to me like the side who are most likely to go and put par in, to almost be leaders in the clubhouse. If you said to me right now, Liverpool get 86 points, and Neil, you've got to spend the rest of the season seeing how everyone else does, I wouldn't be arguing with the 86 points. I think there's every chance that's where they end up. And I think therefore, you've got to give yourself the best possible chance all the way through. And that's why these games coming up, they are massive. And I think that, as I say, you're almost used. Seasons are live things, and what other sides do begins to impact around now. And why December was as hard as it was that every game felt like a matter of life and death because of what Chelsea are doing. If Chelsea go to Leicester this weekend, Leicester have just beaten Everton, they've had a week off, Vardy's back, they get the 5:30 on the telly. That's when they did City, and listen, I'm not saying that Leicester will beat Chelsea, but they'll make it really hard for them. That's not going to be an easy game, and for all we know, we could be sitting here this time next week, Liverpool have got themselves a point against United, and Chelsea have dropped all three, and we're all sitting here looking at each other going, well, everyone's getting closer and closer, but Liverpool are now only four off the pace, and you know what, they didn't play well at Old Trafford, but they hung on in there. All of this stuff is still very, very possible, and we're still so far out, but you've got to give yourself the best possible chance. Don't get me wrong, if Liverpool play a strong side against Southampton, and I think they will, that strong side will want to get a result, and it won't want to go into the Old Trafford game off the back of a defeat. It'll want to go in feeling as though we're all together, boys.
Right, we want to talk about something as Liverpool go head-to-head with Manchester United next week. And I heard Steve McManaman making this point on BT Sport the other day, and I will happily do this now, being a Liverpool fan who's on this show in Liverpool. Can I just say, for the record, a massive congratulations to Wayne Rooney for breaking Bobby Charlton's record, equaling Bobby Charlton's record. The way in which the media reacted to this at the weekend, the kid is from down the road here in Liverpool. He played for Everton, 16 years of age. I remember watching him going, what? That man's a beast. And then you find out what age he is. Just want to move slightly towards that. Why is it he's not getting the credit he deserves? Am I wrong, or is he? It just doesn't feel like he is.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And it's, I think it's just a case of...
And by the way, before fans start jumping on my back, I do quite a lot of work about Manchester United, and I always get tweets and going, you're a closet Manchester United fan. I'm not. I'm a sports broadcaster. I do work in other places. And in my ears, my producer's going, Mank. I'm focusing on Wayne Rooney for my producer behind the glass, who's an Everton fan. But why does he not get the credit he deserves?
You know what, I think it's just typical football. I think football people in general... I've got very short memories, and if you're going back over the very, very sort of, you know, near past, Wayne Rooney's form hasn't been great, so people sort of look at him with a little bit of disdain, I'm feeling, and I'm finding, and I'm reading, and it's just complete and utter rubbish. You know, you've got to look back over, you know, since, what will it be now, it's his 15th year in top flight football. I mean, that's machine-like. And to do what he's done at arguably the biggest club in the world, to equal the record is sensational. And by the way, he hasn't been an out-and-out striker. He hasn't always played up front in a two. He scored goals from midfield, from playing deep. You know, he's been playing all over the place for Man United. So for him to do that, you've got to tip your hat, because you know when he's gone, you'll miss seeing his spectacular goals and his unbelievable touches and his creativity. You'll miss it. So cherish it while it's here. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal achievement. The fact that he's a Scouser, that just makes it all the better for me.
Gerrard, when he was finishing his Liverpool career, had some critics, and people would go, there weren't too many, but those who were critical were scathing at times, even Liverpool fans. Why? What is it? Maybe I'm not used to it as an Irishman. that there is an element of turning against your own, and there's an element of not giving people the full kudos.
I don't think that's Rooney's problem. I think Rooney's issue is he's a victim of the messification of football, which is that Leo Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo are simply so good. And I mean, they could be the two best players who've ever played the game. Genuinely could be. Now, you can carry a torch for Maradona, Pele, Garrincha. You can go through the names. What I mean is these could be the two best players who've ever played the game. And these are footballers who turn around and score 60 goals in a season. Luis Suarez has managed to hit that sort of level. And Rooney, just simply being absolutely brilliant, actually isn't good enough. Because we're able to watch these lads who are far better than absolutely brilliant every single week on Sky, and we get to see them in the Champions League, and we get to see clips of them, and we get to see Leo Messi pick the ball up on the halfway line on the right flank, go round four and put it in the bottom corner. And you get to almost go, oh, that's what great players do. That's not what great players do. Kenny Dalglish didn't do that. Ian Rush didn't do that. Ian Rush scored 360 in the end for Liverpool, might be 340. Doesn't matter. What I mean is, great players are great players, and there's tons and tons of genuine great players, and Wayne Rooney's one of them. He's been a genuinely great player, but he's not been as good as Cristiano Ronaldo, and he's not been as good as Leo Messi, and he's not been as good as Luis Suarez at his best, and he may not actually have been as good as Zlatan Ibrahimovic at his best, but he's still been absolutely brilliant at football. And as a forward, and I take Sangi's point that he's done a lot of his work in midfield or on a flank, but as a forward, which is what he's been in this era, well, the forwards have been touching not just the skies, they've been touching the stratosphere, they've been touching the stars, and he's not quite done that. And that's now not held against him, but what that means is you're able to say, people say things like, oh, if only he'd have fulfilled his potential.
That's the bit there.
He's going to end up scoring 270 goals for Manchester United now, and you look at his trophy cabinet and you want to say he hasn't fulfilled his potential. The fact of the matter is he may well have fulfilled his potential, you just might have overrated his potential in the first place. Or what you might have seen is that there's been three or four lads, and two in particular, who've taken potential and have turned it into the most astonishing week in, week out, and in big games, displays of football that you've ever seen in Ronaldo and Messi, and it's not fair to compare.
Do you think, Neil Sang, football agent, because I'm going to use the football agent angle to get into this in a second, but do you think that the fact that England haven't won anything when he was playing, or haven't got significantly far in a tournament, has affected his reputation, if you like?
I think so, yeah. I think that certainly hampers. But again, I think if you're just a purist football person and you look at Wayne Rooney's performances for club and country, you've got to say he's a world-class player. And I agree with Neil again. Talking about this with a journalist last week, is that there are world-class players, and then there are the elite of the elite. Wayne Rooney's touching that top level.
Or he has done in his career.
Yeah, but he's not quite there. And as I said, the thing that tempers the sort of the feel around him is, I think, his form over the last maybe 12 months, maybe the England thing as well, doesn't quite help. But I just think I think if this happens 2 years ago, people are lauding him. They're shouting from the rooftops.
And do you say to young players, the reason I mentioned you're a football agent there specifically, do you say to young players, watch him, just watch what he does, watch him on the ball, watch him off the ball, watch his attitude? He's been a substitute quite regularly recently. Not a peep out of him. Hasn't thrown the toys out of the pram, just gets on with his job.
Yeah, definitely you do. I'll ask them who their role models are, and then ask them why, and then try and understand the young players from that side of things. And sometimes it can be quite fuzzy. So then you might pick one for them, somebody in a similar position. So you might pick a player to make a certain point about somebody. The reason I was late today, I met a young client from Everton who I think is going to be one of their future superstars. And we were talking about that exact thing. Who you're looking, who you're watching. And we were talking about feedback that he'd recently had from the club is on the defensive side of the game. And I said to him, well, look at Wayne Rooney. Look at Luis Suarez. When they lose the ball in attacking positions, what do? You know, the desire to win it back is ridiculous. So you're trying to say to him almost, you know, take a leaf. You know, there is something, you know, people go, oh, well, I'm me. And I get all that, the individuality of players in football. But then there's also, greatness leaves clues. You go and look at the Ronaldos and the Messis, and they work the socks off. So greatness leave clues. Go and copy. Go and do what they do, because that's what helped them. I'm saying it's the only thing that gets those players there, but it certainly helped them.
There was a lovely quote from about 2008, which was I think it was Messi was in about 2008 gave an interview and said one of the players he watched the most and tried to learn from was Dirk Kuyt, which was crazy. But the reason why was stuff like the work rate, where you drop back, where you work, how you go and win the ball. Yeah. That you watch, that he watches Dirk Kuyt in order to be able to do the Dirk Kuyt side of the game. Even though Dirk Kuyt, you know, the idea to compare Messi and Kuyt's first touch with the greatest of love and respect to Dirk is exceptionally difficult. And I think that's a major thing. But the other thing I'd say is, and I'd say, if you want to talk about young players now, I think you want to talk about young players now. You tell me, you begin to try to tell me who you think the best player in the world is in 5 years and how many goals to score in a season. Because when he was 18, Messi was clearly going to be the best player in the world. And when he was 19, 20, you'd have felt pretty safe saying Ronaldo's going to be top five. But my point is that right now, those lads don't exist. And in 5 years' time...
Give me one, though.
I'm not going to give you one.
I think Ali might be up there.
Raheem Sterling. I like Raheem Sterling. But Raheem Sterling's not going to score 70 goals in a season. No one's going to score 70 goals in a season. Who?
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
Aubameyang looks great. He's not scoring 70. Like, literally in a year, Messi scored 70 goals.
24?
Yeah, he's 24 now. Yeah, he's not a kid, is he? He's not an 18-year-old, 19-year-old. These fellas who skewed everything for everybody, and as I say, I mean, Messi and Ronaldo mostly, though Suarez has shown that you can work and get up to a certain level, both Liverpool and Barcelona. But these fellas have just skewed in the minds of so many people and young people, and that's where I'm a little bit worried about it, what a great season looks like. I'll tell you what a great season is. If you play up front, it's 25 goals. That's a great season. So if you've got a fella there who is scoring 50, well, it's a double great season. It's beyond the pale and then you've got Messi who can break 60, and you're thinking, well, that's more than like that's every time you play a game, you're averaging a goal minimum, maybe even 1.2. And I'll keep saying it, that I think people are going to be going in 5 years' time, where have all the greats gone? And the reality will be, there's the same amount of greats as there ever were, but there's not Ronaldo and Messi absolutely running away with it, and it'll make people go, it's not as good as it used to be. Well, that's how good it is now, and that's why Rooney's this good, and it's why Gerrard was this good, and it's why, for instance, what's his name, who's at Munich, the big Lewandowski's this good, and Suarez is this good, and Neymar's this good, and all these lads that are that good right now, they're all banging in 30s a season. They're all unreal. 30 a season's unreal. 30 a season's like spectacular. Just because two fellas could get 60, you know.
In 5 years' time, you're going to ask yourself, where are all the greats? When you're falling asleep, when you're just dozing off into that gentle world of slumber, in about 5 years' time, let Neil Atkinson's words pop into your head and think, do you remember I was listening to the radio that a couple of years ago?
That lad who wouldn't shut up.
That lad, the Scouser lad with the big wallet. He was right. There's absolutely no greats. Bit of news just coming in the last couple of seconds. Stoke, former Liverpool striker Peter Crouch has signed a new contract with Stoke that will keep him at the club until the summer of 2018. The 35-year-old joined the Potters from Spurs for $10 million in 2011. He scored 49 goals in 186 appearances. Kind of 1-3, 1-2 and, well, 3.5.
He's not threatening Lionel, is he?
He's not threatening Lionel. I was at this feeling he'd have a great season, Crouchy. Maybe he still will, you know, where suddenly he's worked out how to use his height and he's banging in 20 and everyone will be going, how'd you cope with this fella?
Just on
like Niall Quinn had a couple of great years when he was about 33.
Oh, yeah.
Just on that, we said the other day about, I think I was talking to Danny Austin the other day, and he was saying that he wasn't having some, what was it? There was a round of applause for somebody, I think, was it a Stoke player? Oh, Barini. He wasn't having any of it, that Barini was getting a round of applause from the Liverpool fans when he was playing for Sunderland. Yet he was saying, he's happy with Joe Allen getting a round of applause and Peter Crouch getting a round of applause.
But not Charlie Adam.
Charlie Adam. He did make that point. No. So when does it become okay to clap your own players?
I'm sort of all right with Barini because he always worked hard and he never hit.
Yeah, definitely.
He was good when we went there, you know, in the 2-2. He actually set the tone for Sunderland. I can't believe I'm talking about Fab Barini. He set the tone for Sunderland. I thought he had a really good first half. He didn't let Milner go forward. And that's one of the reasons Milner goes off. I actually thought through my drunken paranoid fury that Barini was possibly Sunderland's best performer on the day.
I love your drunken fury because you talk about it in the show quite a lot. Right, lads, you've got about a minute and a half to go. What was your highlight of the FA Cup weekend, apart from the amazing 0-0 draw last evening? What stuck out for you? And is the romance of the cup, is it dead?
Do you know what? I love an upset, and there wasn't one. I was looking around for one. There might have been, I think...
Starbridge got close.
I was going to say, Starbridge were close. I had a little look at them, and was it Sutton United as well? Who did they push all the way? Was it Wimbledon or something?
Yeah, they
like
pushed
that?
AFC Wimbledon to a draw.
Did Ipswich end 2-2?
Ipswich ended 2-2. Derby did West Brom. But I'll be really honest and say I thought my highlight was actually, and I think he's such a funny footballer, was Giroud's winner. In that, and the reason why is because he just keeps doing it, and he's such a weird player because you watch him and you go, oh, he can't do this and he can't do this, and then he'll have 5 minutes where he looks absolutely unplayable.
I can't dislike him. I love him.
Plus, no, exactly. I like what he looks like. He's got a weird body shape. You sort of, you think he looks like he's a bit fly by Mike, but actually he's 6'3" and he batter you. You know what I mean? He's just a weird little footballer, but he's huge.
He has his opinions on himself, and he is beautiful. He's wonderful, and he just reminds me of Neil Sang every time I see him on the television. Listen, lads, we're gonna have.
I think Sangi will batter you.
Don't know about that.
We're going to have to call it a day there, lads. Listen, thanks for joining me. The legends are next here on Radio City Talk. Thanks, lads. Behave yourself. See you tomorrow.